Well, good afternoon, everybody. This is Eric Meyer. I am President and CEO of Spurwink Services. Thank you so much for joining us for today's webinar, Self-Care for the Caregiver. Really important topic, especially in the times that we all live together. A couple of housekeeping comments and questions. Everybody's audio is muted as part of this webinar system, but we encourage folks to use either chat or the Q&A feature to submit questions or comments, the panelists, and we have a team of folks that are monitoring that. We'll definitely keep an eye on that. I think we'll be responding to questions, particularly at the end of today's webinar as well. So just a quick introduction about Spurwink, since we're putting this on today with the help of our friends, of course. So Spurwink is one of Maine's largest behavioral health organizations. We serve Maine people with behavioral health needs, substance use challenges, autism, and intellectual disabilities across the state of Maine. This past year, we served over 8,000 people with 1,200 employees statewide. And one of our priorities as an organization is to identify and work to meet pressing needs of our community. This webinar is one of the ways that Spurwink is providing resources to the public during the pandemic. And we think it's very important for Spurwink to share our expertise to meet community need. And we're really honored and happy to be able to do that today. So I think, as you know, the ongoing nature of the pandemic and the challenges and uncertainty of that has made the importance of self-care ever more critical for all of us. So to start, before we jump into the webinar itself, I'd like to start with a Zoom poll to get to know all of you a little bit. And if you haven't done Zoom polls, they're super easy and they're really pretty fun. So there's the first Zoom poll question. There are two questions. We're going to do these really fast. If you wouldn't mind, just go ahead and choosing you know, whichever of these apply to you, and we'll have the results that we'll all look at together in just a moment. And you make your choice and you slide it up a little bit, and there's a submit button underneath. And whenever the results are ready to share, Sandy, you can pop them up. Okay. Interesting. So really, so it looks like almost half or a little over half of us are either caring for child family members or adult family members. It's my own situation these days, caring for an adult family member. But then we have folks that are really active in caregiving for children in our care, adults in our care, elderly family members, elderly adults, kids, families, youth impacted by trauma or other. So a lot of caregiving going on. And it gives us all a sense of where we're coming from as a group on this webinar. Thank you. Let's see the second question, Sandy. What is your work status? Working from home, an office location, essential frontline, stay-at-home caregiver, or unemployed? Whichever one fits your situation. And whenever we're ready for the results. 74% of us on this call right now are working from home, 24% in office or on location. We have a number of frontline or essential workers that have joined us as well, and then a smaller number of some other situations. That was really helpful. Thank you. Thank you very much for sharing that. And now I would love to invite our panelists to introduce themselves.
Hello, everyone. I'm Amy Cohan. I am the Vice President of Outpatient and Community Services at Spurwink. I've been working at Spurwink for about 26 years. in our outpatient services, and I am also the parent of young adult children, one of whom is living at home, college student, remote learning as many, and also a caregiver of an elder parent.
And I'm Abby O'Connor. I'm the regional director of our outpatient community-based services out of our Lewiston office. And I have been here at Spurwink for 15 years, and I have a very active 2-year-old at home, and I have been working remotely.
Hi, everyone. I'm Nora Morse. I'm the associate director of the affiliate program on the outpatient side of Spurwink. I've been with Spurwink 9 years, I believe, and caregiving school-age children, working from home, virtual school. Nice to see you all today.
My name is Sherry Crowell. I'm the associate director of our outpatient and community services office in Lewiston. I am a mother of 3 small boys, 2 school age and 1 toddler, and I've been working mostly from home and a day a week in a public school.
Thank you very much. What a great group. And I'll just say I know and work with all of our panelists today, and I am I know personally honored and really pleased that they could be here to share their wisdom with all of us. So we're going to start this webinar with a meditation or centering activity. And Nora, I think, will lead us through that. So Nora, take it away.
Yeah, when we were thinking about how to spend our time, we wanted to jump right in and offer you all some self-care. So I'm going to invite you all to participate in a short self-care activity. I'm going to attempt to help you get 5 minutes of your day back. Got a beautiful image on the screen, and I'm going to walk you through a short exercise. We're gonna do this. We're gonna give our busy, cluttered minds a break and our bodies a reset. You got yourself here in front of this webinar, so first off, give yourself credit for showing up, for prioritizing self-care despite the million conflicting priorities that might be in front of you. You can silence your phone, maybe close your door to keep the kids and the pets out. 5 minutes. Now that you've arrived, let's do a brief scan of our body. Let's start by finding a comfortable position. Uncross your legs, feet on the floor or supported somehow. Close your eyes if that feels comfortable for you. If you get interrupted, that's okay. If your phone buzzes or someone walks in, you can always rejoin the exercise. Mindfulness research tells us that the best way to reset ourselves is through our breathing. Did you know that we take between roughly 15 and 20,000 breaths in a day? Over the next couple minutes, I'm asking you to pay attention to just a few of those breaths. Notice your breath. You've been breathing all day, probably all night too, but perhaps without awareness. Is your breath shallow in your chest? Is it rapid or slow? See if you can deepen your breath. Breathe in through your nose, out through your mouth. As you breathe in, breathe so that you feel your stomach rise. And as you breathe out, your stomach falls. This is the diaphragmatic breath. This is a breath that elicits a true relaxation response within your body. Calming hormones are being released. And if the diaphragmatic breath doesn't feel right, that's okay. Just resume your usual breathing. Have you noticed your mind wandering? Possibly, that's what minds do. Give yourself credit for noticing this. This is the first step towards mindful awareness. Now take a few moments and check in with the rest of your body. What's going on? Perhaps starting at your head and scanning down your body. Is there tension? If you notice tension or clenching, see if you can breathe into that area. And as you exhale, letting that tension go. Some people like to associate a word or a phrase or a color with their breathing. Inhaling a sense of calm and peace, for example, and exhaling words or colors that represent stress and tension. Just another moment of awareness here of your breath and your body. Everything important will still be there when this is over. Remembering that this moment of restoration will re-energize you for the rest of today. Take another inhale and exhale. And when you are ready, you can open your eyes.
Thank you, Nora. Really nice way to start a focus on self-care. So it's interesting, you know, we've used that term a lot here. I think it comes up a lot in day-to-day life, self-care. And really, that's our first question for the panelists today. What does the term self-care really mean? What about self-compassion? We've heard that term too. How are they different? I think that's you, Amy.
Great. Yeah, thanks so much. And thanks, Nora, for getting us started in that way. When I sit with you and have the opportunity to do those, I always have the sense that we should start every meeting like that. So thank you. For the purpose of the conversation today, I think Eric did this a little bit in the intro, but just to kind of set the framework as well for the context we're in. So self-care takes on a just incredibly important place in the context that we're in, living in a pandemic, in a incredibly kind of politically divisive time with an election going on. We've had the backdrop of racial justice and communities in places of unrest around racial injustice. All of those things make our circumstances right now even more difficult. I think the pandemic has made our jobs as caregivers harder. We've all experienced a variety of losses. Losses of normalcy, losses of routine, and even tragically losses of life. So taking care of ourselves right now couldn't be more important. So for a starting place as a definition, one that I really like and will offer is the idea that self-care is the practice of taking an active role in protecting and enhancing our own well-being and our own happiness. Taking on a just even more important time during periods of stress, but I would also say it is a lifelong practice, something that we should be invested in our well-being and our happiness kind of all the time. So, but certainly very important right now. And I know looking at the registrations that we have folks from different organizations, some in roles of leadership and other kinds of roles. And I guess I would encourage people to also think potentially about the organization you're in and what might organizational self-care look like. So that's taking a little more of an expansive look, but interesting to think about the ways in which we can bring self-care to our workplaces as well. So from the purposes of how we're thinking about it today, we would like to kind of group some categories of self-care. So thinking about the physical, and I think when we think about self-care, we probably often think about things like walking and eating well and staying hydrated. All of those are excellent self-care strategies and absolutely important. But there are also areas including our spiritual selves, our emotional selves, and our mental selves that I think we're going to try to dig a little deeper in to think about what about strategies in each of those areas. When I think about spiritual, for example, where is church and synagogue and mosque for us right now? Where is fellowship for some of us? Faith-based activities may be different in that where they're doing them virtually. And for other people, it could be nature and being outdoors and finding spirituality in those places. So trying to help us all think kind of expansively about what self-care is today. The other thought about today, I guess, and sort of what our hope is also to say that we know that people are pretty overwhelmed. We talk a lot about Zoom exhaustion and other ways in which we're all just working really hard and pulled in a lot of directions. So we are going to also try to focus on some things that are simple and hopefully doable and things that people can take away today and maybe integrate into their lives. And in terms of self-compassion is an important piece of self-care, kind of more of a mindset that we might bring to this. And Abby's going to talk a little bit about that.
Thanks, Amy. I think we have to talk about self-compassion when we're talking about self-care. it's such a huge part in taking care of ourselves. I think most of you, if not all, might agree when I say that we are our worst critic. We are the first to point out our mistakes. And the irony is that when a friend is in a similar situation or the same situation, we don't respond to them in the way that we respond to ourselves about our mistakes, right? We offer kindness, we offer support, we try and find ways to help. And yet we don't give ourselves that same courtesy. I think when you look into self-compassion, you're bound to stumble upon Dr. Neff, who's an absolute expert on this subject. And self-compassion is a pretty big term. So she breaks it down in three parts, which I think can be helpful. One is self-kindness, which pretty self-explanatory, but it's just really about moving judgment that you have on yourself and offering yourself that kindness and being kind to yourself and just allowing room for that and recognizing what you did do that day or how well you handled something versus what you didn't do or maybe some mistakes that you made. The second is around common humility and just recognizing that we're all human. And by that fact, we are all imperfect. And forgiving yourself for making mistakes because you're going to make mistakes. This is part of being human and just coming to a place of acceptance of that. And the last part is just being mindful and having mindfulness in your daily practice. I think we have to acknowledge and name the feelings that we're having or the thoughts that we're having when maybe we're having a really difficult moment or we're in a time of hardship. And only by naming them are we then able to shift our thoughts to becoming from a place of kindness and compassion. Without doing that, you're going to stay in that negative self-talk, right? Before handing you guys back to Eric, I'm going to just give you a couple quick tips and ways to sort of build self-compassion into your day. And these are just brief little things that you can do, right? So one is just for folks who might be interested in journaling or like to just sort of process their day, I encourage you to do it through the lens of self-compassion and sort of thinking about those three things that we talked about. The second is when you're having a difficult time, ask yourself, how might you respond to a friend? And whatever that answer is, do the same for yourself because you deserve it. I think now more than ever, we have to be kind to ourselves and we have to be compassionate towards ourselves.
Thank you. Thank you, Abby. And thank you, Amy. That was really interesting. You know, it's like, so I'm a clinical social worker as well as a leader at Spurwink. And, you know, I'm very familiar with these terms, but I have to say that I don't think often enough about this notion of self-compassion. And I really appreciated the way you were framing that up. It was useful and a great reminder. So this provides a great framework for us. It helps us understand kind of what it is we're talking about, but why does it matter? Why is it so important, especially in our current context? Sherry, what do you think about that?
Hi, everybody. My apologies. I realized in my introduction, I forgot to state my tenure. I've been with Spurwink 13 years. So self-care is important because when the well starts to run dry, it impacts everything. There's definitely a mind-body connection with stress, but the upshot is if we pay attention to the clues, we can actually make that connection work in our favor. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the different domains of self-care or different domains of stress and how we feel it. And so starting with physical, there's definitely a big body piece there that can come out as muscle tension, headaches, fatigue, just to name a few common ones. And also prolonged or acute stress can impact your immune system, help you, it can make you get sick more, it can make you more prone to injury. There's a mental component. I've heard from others and have experienced myself feeling more scattered or forgetful, excessive worrying at times about little things, having a hard time making decisions, not thinking as clearly. And then there's this notion of the overall negative mindset. I think of the children's book and movie, Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day. That is definitely something that has plagued me on occasion and is a big clue that I need to tune into myself.
There's an emotional piece. Irritability is a big one, with no clear trigger. Like, I just feel ramped up and I don't know why. Or it can be overreacting to minor stressors. Like, something little happens. My child doesn't put on his shoes and socks fast enough and I am just off the wall irritated. Other things people might feel are apathy or this general sense of hopelessness or loneliness. So the last one that I'll talk about is behavior. All of our actions are driven by all of these three factors. And when we're under stress, we tend to lean more into quick fix coping mechanisms, which can provide us instant gratification and relief, but tend to impact all of these domains negatively over time. So some examples of that might be appetite. I hear of folks who have decreased appetite and eat less when they're stressed out, but that's not me. And more so I hear of people who are the opposite. Comfort food is something I think during the pandemic, lots of us have been leaning into because we're stuck home and it's easy and it feels really great to eat ice cream or cheese fries. And, you know, don't cut that out totally because it can certainly help. But, you know, it can certainly be a slippery slope. There's been a lot of talk about COVID weight gain. It's a real thing. Sleep, also a huge one. Staying up too late, I know that is often alone time for caregivers of young children, and next thing you know, you're six episodes into Working Moms on Netflix, and it's 11 o'clock. that can also look like waking up more frequently because you're stressed and you can't turn off your mind. I know there's, you know, waking up in the middle of the night and needing to use the bathroom, but then not being able to go back to sleep because of those racing thoughts and obsessing about your to-do list or reliving a conversation that didn't go so well. Increased vices, substance use, that glass of wine at dinner might turn into two or three after a bad day. And if you're having a regular stressful life, that could definitely be a slippery slope as well. And then another one that I know resonates a lot with me is just this feeling of being less patient overall. That irritability leads to this sense of always rushing and, you know, maybe unintentionally engaging in power struggles, I think, with my kiddos, again, demanding compliance and hurry up instead of taking time to listen. And then next thing you know, I'm sending my six-year-old off to school in a bad mood. So all of these things are interconnected. It's important to pay attention when things seem amiss, and this is going to be addressed more later. But now Nora's going to speak more to the uniqueness of these issues within the pandemic.
It's sort of like that Alexander and the no good, very bad, horrible day sort of on repeat since March. I think in preparing for this webinar today, we were sharing some resources and you all, I'm sure, have been sort of weeding through the helpful articles and that have popped up since the pandemic began. But the one that really struck a lot of us in thinking about today was an article that we'll share in our resources after the fact, but it talks about this concept of surge capacity, which is not a term that I was familiar with, but this idea that we, as humans, or animals likely, we all have this surge capacity, which is sort of the resources to handle an acutely stressful situation. The problem is that the idea is that it's acute, meaning it's short term. And so here we are moving into the third season, essentially, of this pandemic. And this article sort of argues that our surge capacity is depleted. So a lot of folks that are high achievers, do well in crisis, fight or flight, like I got this, you know, there was even sort of maybe a period this spring where you felt really incredibly productive and able to pivot and adapt and wow, we've launched this and we're doing this. And now all of a sudden you feel like you can't even get up in the morning. And so that's, I think to Sherry's point, you know, she was talking about, we could have been having this conversation about stress a year ago or 2 years ago at any time, but what's unique about stress now is where we're at with this pandemic. Some other things I think to point out is that there is, and Amy and Abby, I think both spoke to this already, there's a collective grieving process. Many of you probably know about the stages of grief, but the resulting emotions are difficult ones. They can be anger, they can be denial. Oppositionality, a lot of what we're seeing in our news and our relationships with other people might be couched in this sort of collective grief response of grieving the losses that are associated with this pandemic. That combined with the ambiguity of it and the fact that there is no clear end in sight is really particularly exacerbates that. So I'm sure that what I'm saying here isn't surprising to anybody, but it is worth noting and affirming that the game has changed, and that, and as a lot of our resources have pointed out, and it's important that we recognize that and have that self-compassion and react accordingly.
Really interesting. Thank you, guys. I like that comment about surge capacity. In preparing for this, that was an article that Amy shared with us, and it was also kind of a new concept for me, but also one that made perfect sense in the context of where we are. So there's a lot going on. It's been going on for ages. We're experiencing it in lots of different ways. But how do we know when our feelings and experiences are beyond what we can handle ourselves when we're caring for self and caring for others? Amy.
Thank you. That's a really important question. And I know that my guess anyway is that some of the folks on the call are eager to get to strategies, and I will get there, but we also really want to acknowledge that some of the things that Sherry was sharing may get us into places where we really need to expand how we're thinking about self-care to include the help of others. And I think this is both to normalize that this is not to say that these aren't normal experiences, but it really may require us to call on some different types of supports to help with them. We do now, after several months into the pandemic, have increasing data to kind of validate, I think, some of these experiences we're having, where the CDC, I think this will also go out in the resources, links to this, are beginning to identify increasing rates of depression, anxiety, suicidal thinking, sadly, substance use overdoses, increased incidence of outreach to domestic violence centers for intimate partner violence. So all of those things, I think, just give a lot of credence to the importance of getting help in these moments when we need it. In thinking about this as part of self-care, I think one of the things I wanted to say was this notion that because they call it self-care doesn't mean you have to do it by yourself, right? There is, I think, a huge need for reaching out to others, and that could be friends, partners, social circles, some of the other supports we mentioned, but also sometimes helping professionals. So I think important to think about that could be medical providers, behavioral health providers, peers, and I was going to talk a little bit more about resources, but I think one of the things we wanted to explore just a little bit was the idea of when do we know when that might be a good idea? When do we know? So I think a piece of this is knowing ourselves, being tuned in to kind of how we're feeling, what our norms and patterns are, how different is where we're at right now with maybe where we've been pre-pandemic. So think about that as you think about some of these things, maybe to be aware of. Abby, Sherry, I think mentioned sleep and eating. So patterns of sleep and eating are really important to our health and our well-being and our happiness. When we're experiencing difficulty sleeping or difficulty getting up on a repeat basis, such that it's interfering with our kind of ability to do the things we both need and want to do, that's probably something to pay attention to. Similarly, eating either more or less than necessary in such a way that is getting in the way for us is feeling unhealthy and unhelpful. Weight loss, certainly something to pay attention to from a health standpoint. Over-reliance on alcohol and substances to cope with some of the strong feelings that we're all having right now is also something important to pay attention to. The reference in the CDC data to sadness and anxiety, we're all experiencing this. These are normal responses to what's going on for us right now. and also important to pay attention to when it gets beyond something that we feel like we can cope with ourselves. So those indicators might be when it's getting in the way of us enjoying things or doing things that we normally want to do and enjoy doing. Additionally, when strategies we typically use aren't working, so things that maybe helped us feel better before right now are not working. And so those might be times where it's a good idea to reach out to seek support from someone else. And then let's face it, right? Pandemic has been difficult for couples and for families coping at home. How do we share responsibilities? People are, and I know there's a big number of people on the call who are working from home. Is your spouse also working from home, or are they going off during the day and maybe coming back expecting something different than what it looks like when they get there, right? And, you know, what are those negotiations that are happening between couples? And a lot of times couples can work through that stuff, can use good communication and perhaps renegotiating about sharing of responsibilities at home. But other times you might need some help to do that. That's not easy. We've got things thrown in: employment, financial stress, parenting stressors, health concerns, all the things that we've been talking about. So I guess we really wanted to just name those and say important to know that there are resources and providers out there, like those of us on the panel here at Spurwink and in many other behavioral health organizations around the state, who are really eager. And it's kind of why we're here, why we do what we do, and we really would hope that people will reach out to get the support that they need. So Abby's going to share a little bit about resources. And this will also be, I think, in the shared, potentially in the chat, and also in the resources that go out afterwards, so people don't need to worry about writing everything down.
Yeah, thanks, Amy. I'm just going to give you all just a place to start. I think there's lots of different resources out there, but just hopefully this is just to give you a starting point. The first one I wanted to mention is your PCP. Always a good idea to reach out to your PCP and let them know what's going on for you. I think they can really help guide and steer you in the right direction. And depending on the practice, they might have counseling offered right within their office, and so it might also be just a nice, easy way to get connected to that support. Another potential option for folks is EAP, your employee assistance program offered by your employer. This is, as you may know, but just really designed to be a short-term, three sessions of counseling or a type of support, and can be really great when you just sort of need that little extra help, a little extra support. Certainly you can check us out on spurwink.org and see what we offer, as well as other mental health agencies. I will also say there's 2-on-1, which is a great resource when you just sort of plug in what you're looking for, from counseling to all the way to food banks and what area you're in, and it will create a list for you based on that criteria. Another couple of resources I want to talk about are a little bit different. They're warm lines. And so there is a warm line called Frontline Warm Line that's specific for folks working in the healthcare system and including behavioral health care. And it's staffed by volunteers and peers, and can be a great support to call and just have someone to talk to. The other warm line is a little bit more broad. It's the intentional warm line through Sweetser. And that is staffed by trained peer specialists who have essentially sort of navigated their own way through their own mental health challenges and can just also be another support for folks. And lastly, I want to just mention, I think it's important to acknowledge the Maine statewide crisis hotline. I think, as Amy mentioned, stress can really bring us into some dark places and bring up thoughts that we have about hurting ourselves, perhaps. And just making sure you guys have that resource if you're even just in that realm. So hopefully that's just a place to start for everybody. Again, there's lots of resources out there. One thing I will note, I think one benefit, I'm going to say that, to COVID is it has really broken down barriers in accessing support and services. So if you live in one state, one end of the state, you can potentially have a clinician that's, you know, located at the other end, and all through telehealth. But I just want to acknowledge, you know, there are wait lists out there for sure, but the services and the supports are available to you. I think just, you know, off the heels of self-compassion, I just urge you to take time for yourself and to do this if you feel like this would be helpful. I think we're often putting ourselves in the last thing to do on your list, and really, really take time and take care of yourself. I think being a caregiver and whatever that means for you is incredibly difficult on a good day, never mind during a pandemic. So I urge you to reach out and get some support for yourself if you need it.
Really good stuff, guys. And actually, thank you both. And it really flows so nicely into the next question, because you're talking about resources. You're talking about ways to we can have support each other, get assistance. You know, but since we're in this for the long haul, and Nora, I think this would be great for you to respond to. Since we're in this for the long haul, I wonder if you can share some of the self-care strategies that help caregivers. What are some simple and sustainable approaches to self-care?
Yeah, so I think I'm going to talk a little bit about, go back to sort of what Amy referenced earlier and start by saying, if you have the wherewithal, if you have a piece of paper, if you have 2 minutes during this webinar or even after the webinar, 30 seconds, create a self-care plan for yourself. Write it down strike while the iron is hot. What are you going to give yourself permission to do differently or the same or more of maybe? Having now sort of listened in on the importance of self-care for your endurance, essentially. So one way to think about structuring your self-care plan, again, is to break it into the domains that Amy referenced earlier. So we talk about mental, we talk about physical, emotional, and spiritual, and all the panelists, I think, have spoken about some examples of those. But one... you can look at sort of in-the-moment strategies versus long-term strategies might be one way to think about it. So, for example, in-the-moment strategies are when you can't get, you know, away to take a run or take a walk or go for a drive or go get a cup of coffee. You know, when you're in a stressful situation with the person that you're caregiving, for example, what can you do in that moment? Certainly, mentally, there is a lot of information. There's a lot. That's why part of why we shared that exercise with you at the beginning. This is where that ability to sort of check our thoughts and check our feelings and center ourselves can be really helpful. A couple of really quick mindfulness exercises in that domain. For example, one might be just that body scan that I talked about earlier, or doing, again, this is invisible, nobody needs to know you're doing this. Noticing if there's tension in your body, seeing if you can relax that tension, or even a systematic sort of tensing and relaxing of your body can often help to reduce tension in the moment. We had another panelist we worked with early in the year. She talked about just the simple act of putting your hand on your heart, just placing your hand on your heart, something as simple as that can bring yourself back into your body, into the moment. So if you're getting really caught up in the stress of a moment, that can be a nice exercise. So these are just what sometimes are referred to as pocket strategies, quick little in the moment strategies. And then the longer term strategies are more back to that. What's reasonable for you to commit to? What can you do to build up your resilience ongoingly? Is it that, you know, calling this friend once a week is, you know, that that's really helpful for you? Or is it, you know, that getting that exercise is very helpful for you? So longer term strategies built in and with the shorter term in the moment strategies, I think can be a good way to think about it. Physical strategies have been talked about, exercise. We know so much about the value of movement. I think there is a lot of, here in Maine, there has been a lot of talk about getting outside and during this beautiful seasons that we've had. I know for myself personally, I've always loved getting outside and found it to be very grounding and centering, but now more than ever, I find that with all of the uncertainty in the world around that sometimes just watching the birds on the beach can be the most certain moment that I have in the day, and that that can be a very grounding process. Spiritual, we've talked about a little bit, certainly community, what's your source of higher power? What's your connection with others? How do you relate to others? And I have to tell you, you know, this, again, speaking from a personal experience, last week, something that really stood out for me is that I got three different pieces of mail last week that weren't bills and they weren't, you know, ads, political ads, these horrible political ads that I'm getting. They were letters. People had sent mail, and it just really brought me back to feeling, taking me out of that time of, I think we can feel when we're in our homes, working at home, being with our systems, the walls can sort of be closing in on us. So reaching out, or in my case, being lucky enough to have someone reach out to me via the mail, sort of reminded me that I do have a community. So it's inspiring me to think about kind of doing that back, right, to others. So that's that meeting that spiritual need too. So sort of jumped all over the place, but hopefully I've touched a few on a couple examples of the four domains. I know Sherry has some really great examples too that she's going to share as well. So I'll stop talking and pass it off to Sherry.
I'm going to jump all over the place a little bit myself, but I'm going to try to personalize this a little bit with the caveat that this is a work in progress. This is what I strive to do, and it doesn't always play out this way, but this is what I'm trying to do. So self-care includes treating yourself in big and small ways, but I look at it more as maximizing the mundane, you know, the everyday moments in your life that you can't get away from, so you might as well enjoy them. My 10-minute shower in the morning is my zen time. That is my time alone, and it is key to starting my day off on the right foot, regardless of how much sleep I may have gotten the night before. Another thing that is extremely important, I think to all of us, but I know for me, are routines. And the pandemic has forced us to look at structure differently. I devote chunks of my time every week to planning my work schedule for the week. I block out my kid time, schedule meetings. I send lots and lots of calendar invites, and I make to-do lists. And I do the same thing with our family calendar, which is color-coded and updated every 2 weeks. The kicker here is know thyself. This probably sounds like torture to some of you, but for me, this is key to my mental self-care. Amy touched a little bit upon communication with your significant other. And so I know that in my own situation, the business partnership aspect of that has kicked into high gear during the pandemic. And in our house, it hasn't always been pretty, but we have forged through and forced ourselves to just reevaluate and assess. And we know who's in charge of what tasks. And we're constantly talking about this and checking in based on stress level. And it's just really important to ask for what you need, or if your partner's not asking, but you can tell that they're stressed, to try to start that conversation with them. Bedtime for kids. This has always been a huge part of my own parenting, but even more so in the pandemic when that alone time is just so important. We do include family time in this. We, you know, nothing big. We're not sitting around playing board games every night, although it would be nice, but just having some time where we're all sitting around the TV together at the end of the night, watching something and being together. Right now it's Halloween themed, but then getting them into bed so that that us time can start on time, and we're not finding ourselves staying up until 11 o'clock every night. So my regular go-to, speaking to those domains, music. I know music is huge for many. I know it is for me. Singing in the car was always one of the big ones for me, and I don't spend as much time in my car, so there's a lot more singing in my house, whether my children like it or not. And they, you know, it's funny to see two of my kids have joined in on the fun, and we make up little silly songs, and that's been really fun. Running is my physical outlet. Not everybody likes this, but that's mine, and I try to make time for that. And then reading. Spending a lot of time at home has really lent itself to doing some reading, and that's something that I try to do after the kids go to bed. I know my husband is really into podcasts, and one way that he works those in is he puts in one earbud while he's cooking dinner, and he's able to sort of monitor everything and enjoy his podcast at the same time. So some of these things have shifted slightly, obviously, with the pandemic. Humor is always a go-to for me, but there's definitely a big bigger emphasis on that now. It's a lot more fun to laugh than cry. So trying to find, humor in the little things, even the absurd and even, some of the seriousness going on around us. I know that one thing that social media has been strong on during this is memes. And that is definitely something that resonates with me. And I'm always circulating with my friends and coworkers, relatable stuff. And another thing, I know, just like thinking of holidays, that feels a little bit bleak given the pandemic and, thinking of trick-or-treating and littles. It may not happen. It may look different. But I know this year that we have increased our Halloween decor around the house just to have that visual reminder and holiday cheer, if you will. So being a working parent or caregiver is stressful during non-COVID times. And that self-compassion really comes into play here. We need to be making sure that we have realistic expectations of ourselves. So one upshot of that is that stress certainly feels more normalized and relatable right now. We're all sort of in this together, experiencing all of this, and that has personally helped me shift my own mindset when I've needed to.
That's great, you guys. So I was taking some notes, even though I know I didn't need to, because this is all going to be shared later. But I now want to turn and invite our attendees today to share your own thoughts. Well, first of all, questions, of course, but also any of your own thoughts about self-care strategies and things that you find really helpful in managing kind of this whole situation and caring for yourself as you care for others. So I know we've got a couple of folks that are watching the chat and the Q&A lines, and any of those that come in, we'd love to hear those and share them with everybody on the webinar today.
Eric, while those are coming in, maybe I'm going to just jump in here with a few things. These guys have done such a good job, but there were a couple of pieces that kind of stood out for me, and maybe this is because some of those things like running are not necessarily part of my wheelhouse. So thinking about maybe the things that might be physical in the sense of sensory that maybe are not things that involve quite so much physical activity. So there's a whole cluster of things that had to do with things that are soothing potentially as we get into the colder weather here, things that are warm. Even just taking time to bring a blanket to our lap if you're working from home, and that can feel very soothing, whether it's tea, hot baths, things that smell good. These are just so simple, but they are also things that it's easy when we're busy and stressed to kind of forget to do, is that, lotion or candle or something that kind of just brings a sense of soothing that is great for the physical self, but doesn't involve a big output of energy either. And I think sometimes, we can get feeling like these are just too hard to do. But those are things I think we all can do. The other one that we have talked a little bit about is gratitude. And I think journaling, Abby mentioned journaling, and I don't know again whether it needs to be required full on journaling, although it's probably a great way to really amplify the sense of gratitude. It's hard in the moment when so much is hard going on, but to take moments to think about what are the things that we feel grateful for, and the more we notice them, the more we're looking for them, and the more they get amplified in our life. That's also, I think, really lovely for kids too. So those are just a couple. I know that things are coming in on the chat, but those are a few I wanted to share.
There are some great comments in the chat. I mean, people have some really cool. There's someone who's a shopper and hasn't been able to shop, but yard sales have been awesome. Listening to the books in the car while driving. Stop watching news. We didn't talk a lot about media diet, but how is it helping you? How is it not helping you? Asking ourselves that question with our media diet. Playing music, lighting candles.
That's a great one. I can just chime in on media diet for a minute, which is to say doing a bit of an assessment of what you're watching and listening to. It's so easy to jump on to any of these social media platforms and then have, an hour go by that you've sort of lost and gone down a bit of a rabbit hole. And at the end of that, are you feeling more informed? Is it, you know, is it material you really needed? Is it helping you when we go back to that definition? Is it contributing to protecting and enhancing your well-being and happiness or not? And on the flip side of that, I think there's a lot of good stuff out there too. So, you know, you sort of need to be selective and, you know, and working over the years with Nora and outpatient therapy settings, we've talked about the vast resources now on things like our iPhones or smartphones, apps for things like mindfulness and relaxation exercises. So while social media and some of the technology can be tricky to navigate, it also can offer some things that maybe give us pathways for trying things that we might not have otherwise. So consider some, we can probably add this as well into the resources, Nora, but I think that there's some nice apps out there for mindfulness practice and relaxation that really make it easy.
And a lot of free stuff right now too.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's some great stuff coming through in the chat. Just seeing the Netflix, you know, what binge watching worthy episode are you into now? And that's certainly been something that I've been grabbing a hold of. It's always a little like, okay, now what do I watch after whatever episode? And I think for me too, just to add a little bit around, like, I too am a runner and I like to cook, which is a nice little balance in there in that way. But also just sort of keeping my mindset in a place of just, you know, whatever sort of tasks I just sort of feel like I can't get to, just remembering like anything is something, and just being sort of kind to myself again in that way. Taking care of myself. But I love what's coming through on the chat.
I agree with your comments about that. Just to double check, are we going to be able to print off or copy the Q&A pieces and the chat and be able to have that as part of our follow-up material we send out? Does anybody know? I see a message from Sandy. We can. Good. I don't have time to go through and discuss and read all of them, but some of them, not only are they making me smile, but others are just really neat reflections, I think, on your own lives and the folks that are a part of this webinar today. So thank you so much for sharing those. We will get that material out later, along with a recording of this entire webinar and a list of other kinds of resources that will go out to all attendees. So everybody will have that as an opportunity to look at as well. So I'm going to move us into our closing remarks now. And I want to start by just thanking our presenters. So Amy, Abby, Sherry, Nora, so generous of you to give of yourselves and your time today. I know I found this incredibly helpful, and I so appreciate you making this available for folks to benefit from your thoughts. You know, your guidance has really highlighted the importance of caring for selves as caregivers. And, you know, one of the ways that I look at this, as I was thinking about the material and the discussion, is I think about our caring for others almost like a pitcher full of cool, refreshing water. And then in caring for others, we're pouring that out into the cups of those who are thirsty and those who need. But if we don't refill that pitcher, we start to run low. And so the caregiving piece is a way to over time, continue to refill that pitcher and not lose track of it. Because I think, as we all have heard today and learned, that can really cause other challenges for us. And so caring for ourselves as caregivers continues to be a way to keep that pitcher full and keep being able to serve that cool, refreshing water to others who need it. So I want to start also by, in addition to thanking our panel, I want to thank our sponsors. We obviously did this free of charge today, but it would not have been possible without the sponsors who help support Spurwink and the good work that happens here. So our sponsors are Aetna and Foreside, Martin's Point Healthcare, the Bolus Company, Bolus Asset Management, Sun Life, Maine Magazine, and WEX. And if you have a chance in your travels to cross anybody that, or come across anybody that works at any of these fine organizations, thank them for us, because their support for Spurwink makes this and so much more really possible. So as I mentioned earlier, resources from this webinar can be found in the link provided in the chat, but also we're gonna be sending out in a couple of days recordings of the video and other information that was posted. And it'll also be posted on our website, spurwink.org, easy to find. And it'll be there as well. So this webinar is part of our ongoing effort to support community need during the pandemic and provide free resources to the community. And we do that in an ongoing way. And one of those ways is by blogs that some of the folks on our panel are authoring, and then other folks at Spurwink and elsewhere that are having some really good relevant information. So we have blogs on our website. Please consider that a resource that I would encourage you to take advantage of course, around mental health care, supporting yourselves and loved ones during the pandemic. More information on Spurwink, how we can help you or your loved ones, spurwink.org, again, is a great place to go. And with that, I thank everybody for attending, and I truly hope you have a great day. Any final comments from our panelists before we sign off?
I would just echo your thanks, Eric, for people. It was lovely to have such a big group, and I can't wait to go back and read through the chat and the Q&A, because I know that there are so many great ideas, and I'm hoping we didn't miss too many questions, but I think the fact that we had such a big group really speaks to the need in this topic, and I'm grateful we were able to spend the time together.